Has anything changed at home? Sweet Liberty, sweet Liberty is in our land. It's part of the plan, or is it a state of mind? Never forget.
You're listening to Jackie Patru and Sweet Liberty. And now, here's your host, Jackie Patru.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Don't go away. This is Julie. I'm starting the show for Jackie. She'll be with us in 5 minutes. Nicholas, if you can hear me, could you play some music? And don't go away, folks. Thank you. We didn't start off so good.
Okay, folks, I hope that you're still here with us. I am so sorry about this, and it is totally just my own fault. No phone problems tonight. Mm-hmm. I forgot to recharge my long-distance service. Today is Wednesday. It is the 6th of December. This is my brother's birthday.
Oh, great.
Yeah. So happy birthday, Joseph, wherever you are, darling.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, folks, thank you for being here with us tonight. And Julie graciously called up to tell you I would be late. And she kept saying, Jackie, I can't. Our spiritual message tonight, Julie and I were talking, and I read this to her. It's a little marble plaque. I had this on my desk in my office, and now it's sitting here right in the dining room. And we were talking about this, folks. We were having a conversation about real true strength. And this, and she asked me to do this for you. It says, nothing is so strong as gentleness. Now think about this. Nothing is so strong as gentleness. And nothing is so gentle as real strength.
Yeah,
now, isn't that beautiful? To me, that says it all, Julie.
Yeah, it does.
And we were actually in a conversation about the male-female energy and then the receptivity of the woman and the outgoing, aggressive, if you would, of the male.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that, you know, part of our being here is to be able to, in a sense, integrate a balance.
Right.
Because if a male only had all the male attributes, mm-hmm. he would be like Attila the Hun. All the men would be like Attila the Hun. Mm-hmm. And all the women would be docile little, well, I don't know, mushrooms sitting around.
Right.
So, and that was when we got talking about it, that, you know, the gentleness and receptivity of the female expression. And then also it can be that way with the male.
Right. And you see how the world has conditioned women into being more male.
I know.
You see how it's gotten everything all mixed up.
And but being more male but not feminine.
Right.
And men being less masculine.
Right.
And that isn't what this is saying, see?
Right.
Is it?
No.
That isn't.
It's the natural. It's what's, you know, it's speaking of the natural. In the man,
mm-hmm.
of what's natural. So,
yes.
Did you print up that, or do you have that print out of that? What are we going to talk? Are we going to talk about that? That
interview.
Yeah, that
yes,
interview.
Yes, and I grabbed the wrong thing here.
Oh, okay.
It's okay. I can get it. Mm-hmm. Julie and I, it's been interesting and. And our conversations, folks, when we talk off air, it reminds me a lot of times when Alan and I used to talk, Julie.
Yeah.
Because I would say, oh, God, I wish we hadn't done this. I wish we were doing this on air.
Yeah.
But the thing is, oh, here we are, Vatican exorcists. the thing is, folks, that Julie and I have been discussing subjects that, for whatever reason, Alan preferred not to ever even venture into. And I wanted to let you know before I forget, I've talked to you and read some excerpts from the book God's Genes and Consciousness by Paul Von Ward, and he is going to join us next Wednesday on the air. And I'm looking forward to it. And I want to remind you, or maybe not remind you, I want to alert you to this. The book, God's Genes and Consciousness, speaks to the possibility that this planet has been visited by off-planet beings in the past, and that there very possibly has been genetic experimentation and genetic manipulation way, way long ago with the natural humans that were here or the natural beings. But see, Julie, well, of course, then my question goes back to, okay, where did they come from?
Right. We always ask that.
Oh, I know. when I was talking with Paul on the top, I wanted to just have some conversation with him, you know, and
mm-hmm.
and I asked him if he was a humanist, and he said no.
Mm-hmm.
And then I asked him what he was, or not what he was, but he said what he referred to himself as, and I said, well, how would you define that? And he said that there is a consciousness within all things, and that we are, spiritually, that we are all connected.
So he's talking about plants, rocks, you know,
yes.
things like that, that there's a life force in them?
Yes.
That,
well,
oh,
you
okay.
know, yes, and actually the conversation of rocks didn't come up, but I read on his website an article. Well, actually, the article isn't one that you can click on. I printed out several, quite a few of his articles,
mm-hmm.
but he does refer to the book, The Secret Life of Plants.
Okay.
And the article is about the communication, interspecies communication.
Mm-hmm.
And basically what that was referring to is our ability to connect with the plants, the trees, the animals. Julie, I never told you about my little fish, Otto, did I?
No, no.
Well, honey, I had a goldfish. I would have never bought a goldfish, but when the children were much younger, Jody took them to a fair, and they got goldfish at the fair.
Mm-hmm.
And they each had one, and all but one died. And we named him Otto. And of course, I got to keep Otto and take care of him because they couldn't take him back on the airplane. And I took care of Otto. And I cleaned his bowl out and fed him. And I'd sit there and talk to him, you know, when I'd mm-hmm. feed him. And but he was sitting in the den, away from activity, and I took care of him, but I couldn't say, oh, I just, you know, really loved Otto.
Right.
But I guess our love that we show even creatures like that is our willingness to care for them.
Right.
In fact, Nicole called me one time. She said, what are you doing? I said, cleaning out Otto's bowl. She said, Mom, do you still have him? I had him for 8 years, Julie.
Wow.
People said this has to be the longest living goldfish in the world.
I'll say.
But she didn't really mean it, but she said, why don't you flush him down the toilet?
Aww.
I said, Nicole. And she said, oh, you know I don't mean that. But they just kept forgetting about Otto until every summer when the children came. And then they would feed him. And, well, I almost lost Otto. And I found out later, I figured out what it was, that I had been over there polishing some furniture with some liquid gold, and mm-hmm. I am so careful, and, you know, spray it into the rag and all, but there must have been some aerosol in the air, and I discovered that later, because I saw this, like an oil around the top of his bowl,
mm-hmm.
but anyway, I looked over there, and I didn't see Otto, and I went over there, and he's laying down at the bottom of the bowl, but not, he wasn't on his side, but he was sitting down at the bottom. And I put my hand in there, because see, I'll tell you what I used to do when I would clean his bowl out. I'd put water in a gallon jug and let it set and get room temperature, and
mm-hmm.
then I'd put some clean water in a bowl and get Otto out of his bowl and put it in the clean water till I got his bowl clean.
Mm-hmm.
Now, folks, this probably isn't all so interesting. You'll just have to bear with us tonight. But me. But anyway, when I would pick him up out of the little bowl, he always ran from me when I went into the big bowl, you know. But when I would put him in the bowl, as soon as I'd get him in my hand, he would lay still. And he'd never flipped or anything.
Mm-hmm.
He got trusting me, Julie.
Yeah.
And I would close my hand, and I would put it in the water, but I wouldn't open my hand all the way. I'd just uncurl my fingers a little,
mm-hmm.
and he would just lay there in my hand, and then I'd open my fingers, and he'd sit there. And so I knew that he was getting to actually know me.
Mm-hmm.
But, I took some time with him. Well, anyway, I got Otto out of that bowl, and I started actually resuscitating him because I couldn't get him to move.
Oh.
And so I just moved him around that bowl to make that I got clean, fresh water and put him in a mm-hmm. different bowl. And I worked with him and worked with him. And I know he had been, must have really sick, because when he went to the bathroom, it was a long, slimy, black string. But he lived. And I realized, my God, I love him. I love this fish. Well, then it happened again. I had cleaned his bowl and everything, but I didn't change everything. And he seemed okay for about a week. And the next thing, you know, the next time I found him, he was on his side at the bottom of his bowl. And I... he lived again. I was crying, and I said, oh, please, if fish don't have karma and it's okay, please let him live. I never ask for outcomes. But I don't know. I just realized how attached I was to that little fish. And then I went and got him a whole new bowl, whole new everything. And then he was right there on the breakfast snack bar. And Julie, I could go down there. I'd come down in the morning, let the girls out, and then I'd go and say hello to Otto. He'd come right up to the bowl. I'd take my finger, put it up against the bowl, and move it along the bowl, and he'd follow it back and forth. Sometimes he'd come right up to the top of the water and open his little mouth like to blow bubbles. Now, that's a goldfish. Now, that is communication, would you say, honey?
Absolutely. I mean, I've had something similar to that with dolphins that I did that I didn't realize. I mean, it made me realize that we are connected to them. I was at, I think it was Hershey Park, and I was watching a dolphin show. And I don't know what made me do this, but it disturbed me, you know, how they would shout out the commands. So it seemed disrespectful how they were doing it. So I said in my head, don't listen, don't follow that command. She's being very disrespectful. And every time I thought that dolphin would refuse to follow her. And she's standing there going, I don't know what's wrong with him today. And I'm just sitting there. It was so funny because every time I did it, he absolutely refused.
Wow.
So that's when I kind of realized, wait a minute, we are connected somehow to them.
Yes. And so, you and I had that conversation one day when I had told you the experience I've had with my different plants.
Yeah, the plant dropping leaves.
Yes. Until my mother-in-law left. And
then it was happy.
Yes.
So people do affect, you know, affected your plant.
Yes.
You know, with
and
energy.
And that is the, now, this brings us to a whole, to me, all over picture or view or concept that the consciousness of creation is everything, or within everything, Julie.
Right.
Everything. And in that sense, we are all one. And that's not a New Age statement, folks.
Right.
That is not a New Age statement.
We're one in the way that you just spoke.
Yes.
Not in the one that they want us to...
Right.
To, you know, that they're projecting into us.
Well, see, that is the problem. You know, and that we've discussed it briefly, that anything that isn't of organized religion sometimes is painted with a very wide brush. It's New Age.
Right.
So anything that is people who have had the experiences and have done their seeking, their asking, their searching, who understand this, then are branded New Age.
Yeah.
And so much of the truth is smacks of New Age that when, quote, Christians hear it, then they go, oh, that's New Age.
Right, or it's of the devil or...
Oh, there, yeah. Yeah, well, New Age is of the devil, yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And we're venturing in. I was thinking about that earlier tonight. Where angels dare to tread? Not really, but go ahead. You
no, I was just wondering. That's a movie, right?
I don't know. Is it?
I thought that
there
was
a song.
Oh,
where angels?
I thought it was a movie when you said. That's why I asked.
No.
So you think that's what we're doing? We're just treading into things?
Well, what I'm for our listeners, it's a whole new area. I raised the question a couple times, and it was, you know, poo-pooed and and actually, often people who venture into this area are laughed at or denigrated as kooks or something like that. Mm-hmm. And I want our listeners, as far as this book of Paul Ward's, there's so much in it. It's like reading a book of Douglas Reed. There's so much of it that you could just go back and pick up any part of it and read it again and keep seeing new stuff. There's some passages in there that I don't know if it's naivete or not, but I want our listeners to at least be able to have the opportunity to consider. Because that question, Julie, where did we come from? Where did all the different colors and races come from? Have you ever heard anybody answer it in a way that made any sense at all?
No. Maybe that's why we keep asking. Maybe it'll come, I think, eventually.
And yes, and when he and I were talking, and he said that, you know, he referred to Creator as our source. And I said, and then that brings me to a question, Paul. What is the source of the source? I said, yes.
Yeah.
He said, that is the ultimate question. He said, but there's nobody that I know, that I don't believe any of us, could answer that or you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah. You mean in, like, we couldn't say that it's a man or...
Well, no, but...
We couldn't describe it.
The source of our source.
Yeah.
Our creator. It's a concept I used to try. It's sort of the same concept of try to imagine. No beginning and no ending. It always was and ever shall be. Amen. You know that.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Well, lay out in the backyard at night when I was a little girl and look at those stars and try to take myself out there so far in my mind that I could reach the end, but to try to conceive that there is no ending, that is difficult. And it's the same, I guess it is the same as, okay, where was the beginning? Because there was never nothing. There was never...
Yeah, that's another question.
Yes, it is.
We'll keep asking. Maybe it's meant to be a mystery. I don't know. Some things maybe we just won't know.
Exactly.
You know?
Sometimes we have to be satisfied with what we do begin to discover and understand.
And it's okay to do what we're doing, but I don't know if I could consume myself with it, because it would... You'd just go crazy.
Well,
you know, I know.
Yeah,
but
I know because sometimes I can make myself weary.
Yeah, but you got to live too. You know,
with all my questions,
yeah.
I mean.
Yeah,
I can.
At least you're thinking, and you have questions. Some people don't.
Oh,
you know.
Questions.
So, but you said something about Satan or the devil, and I said, speaking of that article.
Okay.
We were talking about how something pumps it, something gets into people, and this kind of falls in line with what we were talking about.
Yeah, people.
You know, if they can't get to you, they can get through you from someone else,
mm-hmm.
that kind of thing. We were talking about the different examples.
I know. Yeah. I just wanted you to expand on that if you wanted to.
Well, Brian's nephew, when he was younger, he had a little friend named Shadow, and he came up to me one day and said, my friend, he said this real arrogantly. I half wonder if Shadow wasn't talking through him, because the way he said it didn't sound like Billy, but he said, my friend Shadow wants me to tell you about him. And I was like, oh, really? And he didn't really, there's no reason really to go into detail, but it's just that something, you could see it in his eyes, you know, something had gotten in him. And he was, gosh, Jackie, I don't think he was more than 6 or 7 years old.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because he looked at me one day out of the corner of his eye, and I've seen this a couple times in people where there's this blackness in their eyes, like that man I saw one day, and I was half tempted to say, he said, don't you remember me, Julie? And he was looking at out of the corner of his eyes. He's walking by real slow, and you could see a smirk. And at that, like, one breath, I saw that blackness in his eyes, and the thought that came into my head was that I don't do exorcisms on Thursday.
Yeah.
But I stopped myself from saying it because I thought I'm not in any position to challenge what's in him, you know. So I just left it, walked away from him. But I've seen that a couple times
mm-hmm.
in people's eyes. So something does get in them. I don't know exactly how. You know, I'm sure you were talking to LeBeau. He might have some ideas. I don't know. They lower the vibration somehow.
Well, that is the only way that I could imagine that it could happen. I've been having those own questions myself since reading about some of this
stuff.
It is
disturbing, isn't it, Jackie, when you see people that you love or people that you know, it's all of a sudden you can see it. It's very disturbing and disheartening because you don't know, you can't reason with them, or you can't, you know, when they're saying those things, you know. It's very scary. So there is something going on. Something does pop into people. It's almost like I joked about it and said they have somebody in the unseen following me so they can pop into somebody just to, you know, get a dig in
mm-hmm.
at me. Yeah. So.
Well, I heard the...
the ding.
You heard the ding. We're going to be taking a break here in about 40 seconds, so I'll share this with our listeners afterwards. Wouldn't it be nice to be able to have a conversation with somebody, Julie, who had some understanding?
Right.
But, you know, my problem today is that I always question their understanding.
Right. Because we don't know what they...
Hear it first on FirstAmendmentRadio.com and FirstAmendmentRadio.net. Around the world and on satellite. Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mined supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188. If you'd like to get a copy of this program, there are a few ways that we can help you. You may subscribe at FirstAmendmentRadio.com for only $45 a month, and you'll receive an MP3 CD weekly of all of our programs. As a bonus, we'll send you a password for our audio archives online. That's a $15 value. Or you may request any month of any program on one MP3 CD for a minimum donation of only $25, or any single program on tape, MP3 CD, or CD for only $15. You may do all of this online at FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Just follow the instructions to make a donation or subscribe. You may also adopt an hour of your favorite program. Please don't forget that most of the programs on FirstAmendmentRadio.com are listener-supported. Don't do Internet? Then call 559-781-3773, and we'll be honored to help you. Thank you from all of us here at FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
Now listen to me. The Bible says, render unto Caesar that which is Caesar's. I want you to know that a corporation is Caesar.
Government takeover of the church. This DVD is the most powerful tool we have for waking up those asleep in the pews. The scripture calls for his people to come out of her. The corporate church is the apostate church, the whore that rides the beast. Get this DVD for a donation of $25 from FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Make copies and give them away to your corporate church friends and loved ones. The truth will make them free. They will watch the DVD, Government Takeover of the Church. Order online today at FirstAmendmentRadio.com or call 559-781-3773. Who will tell them if not you?
There we go. We're back. We're back. Yes, we are.
Yes.
Before we go into that, folks, what I was sharing with Julia, thing that I read from a website, it was a Vatican exorcist, and it was intriguing, and like Julie said while we were on the break, to remember to talk, not just about, because this is a subject that she and I have been talking about from time to time on private conversations, and but we always turn it around. But before we do that, I got a call from Stephen May last night. Stephen May is a man in Ohio. We used to network together when we had the fax networks and that. And he asked me if I would give a red alert for anybody in Ohio that's listening. There's a mental health parity bill. Julie and I, I don't know if you're aware of it.
Did you post it?
No, yeah. I didn't, honey.
Okay.
No, I don't post things Darren does. And
okay.
I haven't been sending him anything to post. I guess he's been so busy. There's things over there that I've sent, and I just wait until he can get to them.
Okay, so it's from Ohio?
This is from Ohio.
Okay.
What I'm going to do, though, is I'm going to, folks, for any of you in Ohio or for those of you who have friends or associates or relatives,
right,
you might want to do this. What I'm going to do is give you Stephen's phone number. He said he would be glad to send them information, give them information. The mental health parity bill, basically what it is this, and they've stopped it. Every time it has come to Ohio, it's already passed the Senate. It's already had its third reading in the House. And he and several of his friends were there, you know, in opposition. And he said that he could see that this, it was a large committee that this bill is in. But what it does is this, mental health parity. Anybody who has health insurance, whatever the limits of their coverage is, it has to cover that much in mental health. The dangers in this is this, Julie. People get put in mental health, you know, mental hospitals.
Yeah.
They'll keep them there until their insurance runs out. And then they'll release them. Mental health parity means that it would be more and more and more insurance money to keep people in mental... I'm talking people who are there and shouldn't be there.
Yes.
Because it's a racket. It's a big racket. And what they're trying to do is stop this bill. So I'm going to give you folks, if any of you want to write this down, Stephen May is his name. His phone number is 614-595-6134. 614-595-6134. And if you want to get a hold of Stephen, he's got a couple of phone numbers you can call. You really should call your own state rep and the governor's office and the chairman of that committee. And, you know, it was exciting talking to him last night, Julie, because we talked about victories.
Oh, okay.
And we had them, honey. We had them. We really did. He said he wants people to understand that all isn't lost, but it takes people being involved.
Right.
And that we absolutely know that is true. Mm-hmm. The problem is that you wind up spending all your money, and then you're just hoping that a new group will come along that will pick up the ball.
Right.
Where we leave off, but, you know...
And you won't see this on the news media.
Well, go, oh my God, no.
Yeah.
My
showing
God,
you the,
no.
The victories that the other side is having. They make you feel hopeless.
Yeah, well, he said he thinks they got their attention, but the governor's
good.
Office evidently made the statement that they were tallying the calls.
Okay.
You know, pro and con.
This had nothing to do with the... Does this have anything to do with the mental health screening that they want to do?
It's all part of everything, honey.
For everybody, you know, to force
everybody. They redefined mental health. He read 800 pages of the diagnostic... DSM-4, he called it. It's the diagnostic for all the different mental health conditions.
Okay.
And he actually read this to the committee that he was talking with, you know, when he was there testifying, that they literally, two of the what they call the worst mental health problems, they literally admit that there is no clinical study that proves that these even exist. But as sick as this is, I have a book on psychiatry here that I read. And basically what the psychiatrists, the Psychiatric Association does is they get together, they sit around a round table, and they decide what is a disorder and what isn't.
Mm-hmm.
For example, Julie, homosexuality used to be considered...
Right.
Well, it isn't. They changed their mind.
Right.
But I read, not all of them, because there's hundreds, but here's the two that blew me away that just stuck in my mind. Over coffee consumption disorder, and there's also inability to express in writing disorder.
Defiance disorder, is that in there?
Probably. Honey, there's all kinds of disorders.
Yeah.
There's all kinds of disorders, and that's mental health.
Yeah, so it's the way they have it set up. We're gonna pin in one of them. You know what I mean? you have defiance disorder, and I don't drink too much coffee, but
he said that he was talking about what did they call it? Polar.
Bipolar. Uh huh.
I said, you know, I don't even really know what that is. He said, well, basically, it's either when you're happy, you're too happy, and then you go from that to really, really sad.
Yeah.
Well, he said now they've got a new degree. You're just a little bit too happy or a little bit too sad. He said that covers everybody.
Yeah.
It covers the politicians, and especially after an election that they lose. But
they plan to drug us all.
Yeah, well, sure.
Oh, well.
Of course they do. You wanted me to share this with our listeners tonight. And folks, this was an interview that I read that with the Vatican's allegedly most expert exorcist.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll tell you why. I'm going to be honest with our listeners. I feel like I've been mincing my words so much, Julie, and I hate doing this. This talk about reptilians, folks, and I was talking to a gentleman who, it is said that the Book of Enoch literally does mention the reptilians, and then I followed a link, said if you read this particular material, because this man knows more about it than anybody, and I printed the whole doggone thing out, 30-some pages, because I didn't want to set at the computer and read it, but I started reading it, and every time I'd go to read it, I'd lay it back down again. And I told you that's why I called you today, because I got to I got just to the second page, and I said, I'm not going to read this.
I think it was the part that said, I don't know if it was was it this part that said that if you don't, if you're finding yourself not wanting to read this, you're obviously...
No, I know when I was printing it out, I actually reformatted it for printing.
Okay.
And so I was doing a little bit of scanning, and I saw that in there someplace.
Okay.
And he said somebody, it said somebody that who, you know, has is being influenced by the reptilians will get sick to their stomach, or they'll
okay.
get headaches because they don't want them to read it.
Yeah.
Well, I say that's BS.
Yeah.
And folks, I'm not saying that I'm buying into this reptilian thing. I want to explore.
Right.
That's what I want to do.
Is that where you found this? Where did you find this article?
Well, this was
about
also
the
Satan Serpent's Bite.
Oh, okay.
Okay, at the end of that number one, he said to go in and because this exorcist mentioned...
He mentioned...
Reptilians too. And scorpions.
Yeah.
And, of course, this is the Catholic Church, but
right.
this guy says he did, he's done over 1,000 exorcisms. This was an aside or more background and further information
mm-hmm.
on this Father Amorth, or Amorth, A-M-O-R-T-H.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they were asking him questions. The Sunday Telegraph. In an interview, Giles Brandes of the Sunday Telegraph, Amorth said that, oh, wait, okay, from the age of 15, never mind. It's okay. He says, I knew nothing of exorcism. I had given it no thought until June 6, 1986, when Cardinal Poletti, the then vicar of Rome, asked to see me. There was a famous exorcist in Rome then, the only one, Father Candido. But he was not well, and Cardinal Poletti told me I was to be his assistant. I learned everything from Father Candido. He was my great master. Quickly, I realized how much work there was to be done and how few exorcists there were to do it. From that day, I dropped everything and dedicated myself entirely to exorcism. Interestingly, Father Amorth says it is possible to sort out fakes and neurotics from real cases of possession. And this is quoting him, by their aversion to the sacrament, all things sacred. If blessed, they become furious. If confronted with the crucifix, they are subdued. And then he was asked, but couldn't an hysteric imitate the symptoms? And he said, we can sort out the phony ones. We look into their eyes.
Yes.
As part of the exorcism, at specific times during the prayers, holding two fingers on the patient's eyes, we raise the eyelids. Almost always, in cases of evil presence, the eyes look completely white. Even with the help of both hands, we can barely discern whether the pupils are towards the top or the bottom of the eye. If the pupils are looking up, the demons in possession are scorpions. If looking down, they are serpents. And that...
Think about what you have never, ever have we heard that, or I have never heard that.
Didn't you say that you knew a woman who had a lot of interaction with shamans and?
Yeah.
And that she had mentioned scorpions.
The scorpions. It was just a little story. She said that they have a that it's in their nature to sting you. Is basically how the story went, but you know. As far as, I don't know, I just, scorpion.
Well, then
demons.
He this is very short here. He said, demons are wary of talking and must be forced to speak. When demons are voluntarily chatty, it's a trick to distract the exorcist.
Mm-hmm.
We must never ask useless questions out of curiosity. We but must interrogate with care. We always begin by asking for the demon's name. And does he answer? Father Amon nods. He said yes, through the patient, but in a strange, unnatural voice. If it is of the devil himself, he says, I am Satan, or Lucifer, or Beelzebub.
Mm-hmm.
We ask if he is alone or if there are others with him. Usually there are 2 or 5, 20 or 30. we must quantify the number. We ask when and how they entered that particular body. We find out whether their presence is due to a spell and the specifics of that spell. During the exorcism, the evil may emerge in slow stages or with sudden explosions. He does not want to show himself. He will be angry, and he is strong. During one exorcism, I saw a child of 11 held down by four strong men. The child threw the men aside with ease. I was there when a boy of 10 lifted a huge heavy table. Afterwards, I felt the muscles in the boy's arms. He could not have done it on his own. He had the strength of the devil inside him. But then when I was sharing that with you today, the thought I had, folks, think about this. You see, this is, if we're going into the other side of this, we've all heard or read of stories where a little woman, a small woman, has lifted a car up off a child,
mm-hmm.
off her child, or some feat that is beyond this physical realm,
right.
And that is not of the devil,
right.
Or evil. Let's say that
the good side,
exactly,
yeah.
Exactly. And I keep remembering that in John, where he says that he that is in you is greater than he that is in the world. And I do know this, and I know that you know this, Julie, is that there is nothing more powerful than the power of love. And the 120-pound woman that can lift a car up,
mm-hmm.
that is the power of love.
Love, yeah.
And you told me once about a conversation you were having with somebody very close to you that you love, and that became very angry, and
mm-hmm.
it was almost like they became another person.
Yes.
And instead of retorting with anger, you reached out and touched him and said, "I love you."
And bam, and he was back to himself.
That was so precious to me to mm-hmm. remember, and folks to keep in mind. Because sometimes when tempers flare and we wind up retorting, responding in kind,
mm-hmm.
we're just feeding that energy, aren't we, Julie?
Yeah. But you do have a right to defend yourself, but you have to be in temperance for that, you know.
Well, don't just say that. Explain what you mean by that.
Well, if somebody's not in temperance and they're, you know, blowing their fuse on you, it could be something pumping in or hooking into them to use their body to come at you. I mean, there's so many things that could be wrong. They may have just lost their temper, and if you react in the same way, what's in them will get in you and start corrupting you. You know. So with
well,
the love,
okay,
it seems to escape.
Thank
it
you.
It seems to diffuse it.
Well, and that what was explained to us in metaphysics
mm-hmm.
is that it is a matter of the frequency, if you would, the vibration.
Oh, okay. Okay, what you're generating. Okay.
Exactly.
Okay.
And they, and in fact, our teacher mentioned that if you notice, if you get real angry with somebody
mm-hmm.
and you don't get angry back, sometimes they'll get angrier and angrier
mm-hmm.
because that energy that they're putting out is bouncing right back at them.
Right.
Because
right.
it cannot penetrate. It cannot penetrate that field. It just isn't the same frequency.
Mm-hmm.
And the higher the frequency that we can hold, I don't like to use that word, but I don't know another word to use to
mm-hmm.
Define it.
Yeah.
But that love is such a high vibration,
mm-hmm.
such a light, that lower vibration of the anger, of the whatever it is, it just cannot penetrate.
Right.
And there would be, you know, in the past when I've had people ask me, you know, how can you not hate all them, you know, that are doing
yeah.
this? I don't know. I said I just choose not to.
Right.
Because I knew this without realizing how much I knew it, that they, this system and this, those in control feed off the negativity.
Right.
And when we lower ours, we become very vulnerable.
Right, and in control by them.
And think about in families when there's a lot of chaos and anger going on and arguments and screaming and yelling, what type of a vibration is that setting up to allow what happens in families?
Right, because we were talking about what it does to the children.
Oh, God.
How it affects them. Yeah.
Yes.
It might alter their vibration somehow.
Wouldn't you think it does?
Yeah.
Honey?
Yeah, they're affected by it. I know, a lot of parents, like the woman up on the hill, she didn't know she didn't think her daughter knew what was going on, but her daughter was always upset, and she knew what was going on. They know it. They feel it. The energy that they're generating at each other, the children feel it whether they're there or not, so they are affecting them.
I lost what you were saying. The woman up on the hill.
Well, I had a friend up. I didn't want to say her name.
You don't have to.
But I was just saying how she was getting a divorce, and how that chaos, she didn't think her daughter knew what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
They tried to hide it, but her daughter knew.
Uh-huh.
She picked up on it. She would come down here and tell me. But her mother didn't think she knew anything about it. But she picked up on the energy in it that her and her husband were generating in the house. They tried to hide it in closed doors, but
don't you know?
It affected her.
I mean, you've walked into places where it just feels so welcoming and warm.
Yeah.
And then you walk into places that you want to turn around and walk out.
Uh-huh. And usually I do.
When I had the fitness centers,
mm-hmm.
it was like home for people.
Okay.
I mean, the members, I mean, you could walk in there and you could just feel it. And I had three small locations, and it was making me crazy because I couldn't clone myself and be everywhere at once. So I got a big space and opened the big one and closed the other three. And this one woman walked in, one of our longtime members, and she said, "Jackie, this place is beautiful, but it intimidates me." I said, "Honey, don't feel like the Lone Ranger. It intimidates me, too." But I said, "You just wait. Because when all of our energy is in here, this will feel just like home again." And I'm telling you, Julie, it happened. It was so beautiful because I had taken a space that used to be a Burlington Coat Factory,
mm-hmm.
big, 22,000 square feet, and it was just so cold and, and it was pretty, when we got it all done, but
right.
It was just nothing. I mean, it was so, and then after a while, you'd walk in the door and you could just feel it.
Harmony.
Oh yeah, it was lovely, and it took a while. It took a few months for that energy to be there. But I had so many people, so many of our members say to me, "I love coming in here. I love the feel of this place," and that's because of, like you said, the harmony that was there.
Did you put plants and stuff like that?
Oh, God, we had plants hanging all over the place.
See? Wow.
I had this one young guy that, excuse me, he used to come in and he had to take big ladders and big long whole things, because they were hanging. It was real high ceilings.
Mm-hmm.
But they were in the office. They were in the on the workout floor. They were everywhere. And he'd come in once a week with his watering and spraying and take care of the plants. Yeah, I never thought about that. That probably. And you know what I had? I had a big, I don't know how big this is. It was a photograph of Ashy that was, I took her to a friend who had a portraiture studio.
Mm-hmm.
She was about 2 years old. It was a precious little picture sitting on a stool looking in a mirror, in a full-length mirror. Mm-hmm. And she blew it up. Debbie blew it up and had it in her studio, and she gave it to me as a gift at her grand opening.
Mm-hmm.
I had that right on the wall.
As soon as you walked in?
Yeah, and it said, and Paul and Frank Baraski was the builder, and he did a beautiful job, and he was such a good I mean, it's wonderful. You know, the job went so beautifully, mm-hmm. and so I had a little plaque there that said Building by Baraski, and then underneath Ashy it said Granddaughter by Jackie.
Oh, that's cute.
But it is. And folks, yeah, these chats that Julie and I have, I wish sometimes you could just be on our phone conversation.
You should tape them.
I know, but God, 3 hours, honey.
Just keep playing them nonstop, Jackie. But
tonight, what we're talking about, think about it. In your family, with those you love, how is it? How is it for them? How is it for your children? And maybe when you have a falling out, I'll tell you, Julie, one of the things that helps me, sometimes I just go, Father, please help me to see this differently. Mm-hmm. When I can feel myself feeling angry or hurt, taking something personally, it really does help. And keep in mind the love that you have for each other. And think about it, folks.
Right, and, so important.
And tomorrow and next week, Julie won't be here. Paul Von Ward will.
Yes.
And
yes.
Probably Julie will be back with us the next Wednesday.
Yeah, unless Paul,
unless Paul comes back. I don't know. He's a really busy man, but I was glad to know that he would come on with us. And folks, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
And Julie.
I love you, Jackie.
I love you, honey.
All right, I'll talk to you soon.
Okay, good night. And good night,
good night, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Your area has just unexpectedly flooded. The power's out, so is the water, and you are thirsty. But wait, outside, look, there's lots of water, and then you see it.
Oh my gosh! What is that floating in the water? And what is that odor?
No problem. You thought ahead and own a Berkey water purification system. Berkey has revolutionized the way water is purified simply.